The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
The Seahawks, we're getting Jamal Adams back pretty soon. Among the teams looking to sign Antonio Brown. Tell you what, if you're undefeated and you haven't had Jamal Adams, and then you add Antonio Brown, oof. Antonio Brown's suspension is eligible to end after week 8, and the Seattle Seahawks are now positioned to make a push to sign him, though they're not alone, league sources tell ESPN. Pete Carroll, Seahawks head coach, of course, on AB's troubled past.
Right now, so let's wait and see what happens and all that. But we do all of the homework we can think of doing. We will never think that we can leave a stone unturned.
You don't have to turn over any stones with AB. You know what it is? He makes trouble wherever he goes. And is impossibly self-destructive. Like, AB didn't have a bad reputation in the league several years ago. And then he makes enough trouble that he gets dealt out of Pittsburgh. And I was thinking, like, what's going on? What are you doing? But, you know, when Le'Veon Bell started talking about Roethlisberger, when you have, the killer bees or the triplets, and two of them are dealt or leave the team, and both point back to the quarterback, then Roethlisberger doesn't look so good, does he? And AB doesn't look so bad. And plus, he's crazy like a fox. Look at the deal he just signed with the Raiders. $29 million guaranteed. As Stephen A. Smith points out constantly on First Take, whenever the subject comes up, all AB had to do was keep his mouth shut. It was a Thursday. Just don't make trouble. Your salary kicks in guaranteed. Your money kicks in guaranteed. $29 million guaranteed on Tuesday. Can you just shut up between Thursday and Tuesday? The answer is no, he couldn't. And he got his contract voided. And not only that, but he was making trouble for... He never got on the field during the regular season. What happened? Gruden publicly supported him. The whole franchise up and down. Everybody publicly supported him, including his teammates, and he wouldn't stop throwing him under the bus. And then he tried to record Gruden without Gruden's knowledge, thinking it would make Gruden look bad. It's like a paranoid personality is what it sounds like, right? Then he's done with the Raiders. They get rid of him. Loses all his money. And he runs out in that stupid video he posted. Grandma, I'm free. I'm free. Free from what? A $29 million guarantee on a team that wanted you and was supporting you publicly? You're free? Okay, so then he signs a much, much smaller deal with the Patriots. But maybe that was his plan all along. He was going to, because remember, the Raiders traded for him because he was under contract to Pittsburgh and then gave him the deal. And I want to say, what did they trade, like a third or a fourth for one of the best players ever at the position in his prime? How could you not make that deal? And then even the contract wasn't that bad. 29 guaranteed to a dude who has years of productivity ahead of him. All right. At that level, all right. Much smaller guarantee with the Patriots, but maybe that was the plan all along, right? You keep giving him the benefit of the doubt. Well, listen, he didn't ask to go to the Raiders. He really wanted to be with the Patriots and Belichick. And even though that first contract's not nearly as much guaranteed money, he's betting on himself and he'll get the same or more money with the Patriots. And not only that, win championships. That's his plan. And on his way in the door, let's not forget, he was accused of a crime by a woman. Sexual crime. And he texted her. It was like a tirade, demeaning her and everything. And even if you think, well, let's take it from his point of view. He really thinks he's being extorted in his own mind. He's innocent. Let's say he really is. And he's furious at her for trying. You would not write what he wrote. You would not hand over a text to someone who's accusing you of a crime that made you look the way he made himself look in that text. It's just bad judgment. And so, like, I started thinking at this point, he has a mental health issue. That's a mental health issue. And I said it on TV. I was concerned about his mental health. But it dawned on me that just because you have a mental health issue, that's not, mutually exclusive with being a jerk. You know what I mean? Like, you could be a jerk whether you're sane or crazy. But you could also be, so like, you could be a jerk and sane. You could also be a jerk and out of your mind. I'm not making light of a mental health issue. Or I'm not, like, being blithe about it. It's a serious thing. And it's not the fault of the person with the issue. But a jerk is a jerk. He may have a mental health issue and be a jerk. And on top of that, what he wrote to that woman thinking it put him, or thinking it was okay to hand that over in a text message to someone who's accusing you of something, is bad judgment. It's just not smart. You could be stupid, a jerk, and have mental health issues. Those three things can be independent in the same person. Could be. Now, Antonio Brown had it tough coming up. I get it. Or maybe I don't. But a lot of people do and don't wind up behaving like him. After that, he goes into the Patriots and sends another text message to a separate woman who also was accusing him of a crime. What? You did it again? Even again, if he felt like, no, I didn't do anything. She's trying to extort me. Let's say that's what he was thinking. Why would you send that text message out? He lasted 11 days with the Patriots. And on his way out the door, through Robert Kraft, it's not throwing him under a bus, not like he had dirt on Kraft, just dissed him on the way out the door. What? He doesn't get it. And the whole time he's, and then, by the way, he's putting on social media an interaction that occurred with his baby's mother, law enforcement, and him that made him look awful. But apparently, since he put it on social media, he thought it made him look victimized or something. Just like he put a text that Juju Smith-Schuster had sent him when Juju Smith-Schuster was still in college. It's coming out juicy now. Juju Smith-Schuster. I got to, hold on, take a sip of water. Hold on a second, Raj. When Juju Smith-Schuster was still in college, like looking up to AB, he posted that to try to make Juju, like he's throwing shade at Juju. No, AB, it makes you look bad to do that. Bad judgment. And the whole time he's talking about, he's making it sound like he doesn't need the NFL and this and that. Okay, AB, so what'd you do while you were gone from the NFL? Did you write a book? Did you organize a food drive or something? Did you do some kind of community organizing, or did you become a big brother, like mentor some kids somewhere, like do something? Did you make some music? What? How did you enrich the world or yourself in some kind of meaningful way? Well, he enrolled in college somewhere, right? Like he was going to get a degree. Not in college, maybe an advanced. He enrolled in some program and immediately put on social media a request for someone to write his paper for him. I don't need the NFL. Watch this. I'm going to get a degree. Let me put this on social media where everyone can see it. Can I plagiarize off someone, please? Come on. He seems ill-equipped to deal with the world. I don't start this way, by the way. I try not to judge someone like Antonio Brown has come a long way in life, and he's done it through an insane work ethic by all accounts. I don't care how talented you are. You get to be like him. It's because you're putting in the work. I don't start out by like ripping someone, but it's incident after incident after incident that betrays not just maybe a mental health issue or poor judgment, but like the behavior of a jerk. So, do I think Antonio Brown, after having said all that, can help a team? You're damn right I do. While he's on the field, he is murder. He's impossible. He's great. He's one of the best who ever did it, and he should still be in his physical prime. While he's on the field, he helps any team. And if you give him a little contract, because he doesn't have much leverage, it won't be hard to get rid of him if he implodes off the field. Were I the Seahawks, would I sign him? Yep. After all that said, I would. But I would not expect him to finish the season. If he, it's a flyer you're taking on him. And if he works out, great. And if he doesn't, see you later. Casey Joyner, the football scientist, joins me on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Casey, are you there?
I am here.
Casey, last week you said something very interesting. You brought it to my attention. The Chiefs want to avoid shootouts. I remember in 2000, I guess it was 18, first five game of the season, they were shooting out constantly and winning. But you point out 2019 and so far this year, they are decidedly mediocre. They're about 500 in shootouts in high scoring games. Could you explain to me again why that would be? I grew up in an era, and in many sports, I feel like the less talented team wants to limit the score because then you're giving Chance a greater chance for luck to play into the outcome. In other words, one play, a whistle this way or that way, a PI call this way or that way, could decide the game. One score, a good drive, and a field goal. Right? You want to limit the interactions. If you're the lesser talented team, between you and the more talented team, thereby giving each event a greater sway on the outcome of the game. But you, what you're saying flies in the face of that reasoning. Why?
If you look at NFL history and you look at teams that score 500 or more points, you're talking the greatest offense in history, those teams, when they get into shootout games, which are games where each team scores 24 or more points, they win about 59% of their games. You take three flyer teams out of those 26 teams, and it gets down to just over 500. And the reason being is, I mean, Bill Parcells used to say this, he said, if I've got a team that's not as talented as the other team, I actually want to throw the ball as often as possible because, A, if I can hit some big plays and I can get maybe a couple of touchdowns, okay, now I'm keeping up in that sense. And, B, when you start throwing the ball a lot, you're getting sacks, you're getting turnovers, you're getting some of those factors where if you're trying to run the ball a ton, you're not going to get as many fumbles and such, so you can get more turnovers in your area as well. And I think the Chiefs realized that in 2018. They were having a 500 mark in those contests, and they lost the conference championship that way. And ever since they've gone to a let's-get-out-of-shootout mode, when they do that, they win almost all their games, including last week's game against Buffalo, which could have been a shootout.
I don't understand the logic still. I got to be honest, because, and we'll get to it in a second, I'm not saying the numbers don't back it up. I'm talking about the why of it all. Like, okay, what's a shootout, right? When you talk about a shootout, if you score quickly, now the other team has a chance to score. But if they're not very good at scoring, then you're going to get the ball back and score quickly again. Like, I want more. If I'm a fighter, a more talented fighter, and I'm in with a less talented fighter, I want to increase exchanges. It'll just, like, when you see fighters like that who don't play safety first, who apply their skill aggressively, yes, they take a little more risk, but they're also much more likely to get their opponent out of there early, to win in a blowout, in other words, right? It just doesn't add up to me why that would be, because if what you're saying is true, then it would always be in the lesser talented teams to the lesser talented team's advantage to throw, right?
I would think maybe you can look at it this way. If you've got a lesser talented team and you decide you're going to throw the ball a lot, you only have to hit a few big plays. You have to say, okay, we need to score three or four touchdowns. If we score four touchdowns in this game, we're going to keep up. And if you're going for those bigger, talented players, or let me put it this way, Bill James used to say that one of the reasons that the nickel defense doesn't work in the NFL, and he's a baseball guy, but he did an analogy of it for baseball. He said one of the reasons the nickel defense doesn't work in the NFL is that when you're behind that far in the game, you're willing to take more chances on offense. And when you're willing to take more chance on offense, you're forcing the defense to have to play a particular way. You're forcing them to have to cover more of the field. You're forcing them to do other things. And your approach to the game is going to lend itself to getting more scores, but it's also going to lend itself to more turnovers and sacks, things of that nature. You're just playing a higher risk game. You're saying, fine, I'm going to go ahead and, you know, I'm going to try to hit some of these big plays. I may not hit them, but if I can hit them and I can score a couple touchdowns, then that offsets the idea of you going and scoring a couple touchdowns. And maybe you think of it as a slugger's chance. The less your talented boxer is trying to swing for a lot of uppercuts, and the more talented boxer needs to make sure that he's watching out for those, because otherwise he could get hit.
I do understand that. It's like, you're not going to box with this guy, so it may hasten your demise to get into a shootout, but at least it also gives you a chance to win. And sometimes you're going to hit on some of those chances. But here, now, so help me with this. And it's playing out the way you're saying. Like, with the Chiefs, I played Patrick Mahomes sound earlier in the week, where he said, look, they were dropping all these guys into coverage. They were giving us the run. So here, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, take the ball and chew up the yards and the clock, and they wound up winning in exactly the way you're suggesting. But then I think about the 07 Super Bowl against the Patriots, where the Patriots had this unstoppable offense. The Giants had a really good defense, and it was a low-scoring affair, which the Giants won. It seems to me as if the Giants would have tried to get to a shootout with the Patriots, they'd have gotten blown out. So what do you do if you're a team that's built around your defense and you play a high-scoring team like the Chiefs? In other words, it seems to me, from what you're saying, is that you you want the Chiefs to throw a lot. It doesn't seem to make sense.
You would want the Chiefs to throw a lot because it's not something. And again, but they talk about the number of people in the box. I mean, again, if you've got an eighth guy in the box, then of course you're going to throw the ball more. And again, the Bills are saying, fine, we'll try and beat you if you run on the football. And you've got to have a team that can do it too. You go back. You mentioned that Patriots Giants Super Bowl. You can also go back to Super Bowl 25 when it was the Giants and the Bills. That famous Super Bowl where Belichick has the defensive game plan that holds that great Bills offense to 19 points. That team wasn't a pass heavy team. It couldn't have been gone in a pass heavy approach. So it was only in certain situations.
Which team are you referring to, the Bills or the Giants?
1990 Giants, where the Giants are not a team that could...
Right, but the Bills were a team that could pass a lot, and Belichick, intentionally, the D coordinator, intentionally put out defensive packages to encourage the Bills to run in order to keep it a lower-scoring game.
Yeah, that's it. And because that worked for their offense, because their offense wasn't the story. You still have to have an offense that can throw. When Barcells in 93, he had a terrible team in the Patriots. He had Drew Bledsoe at quarterback. He said, fine, I'm going to throw the ball 70 times. Literally threw the ball that many times in an overtime win over the Vikings. So it worked for them in that contest, but you're not going to have Jeff Hostetler do that. So you have to be a team that can play. That can do that.
I see. And today, because of the vertical passing game, and the passing game generally, you're saying more teams can do that. There are more teams in a position that can challenge you through the air, right? And so, yep. It behooves the more talented team to not get into that kind of game, not give them the proverbial puncher's chance. It's interesting but confusing to me. I have to be honest.
When you look at the Monday night game with the Chiefs versus Bills, the Bills for the season are allowing a score on nearly 50% of the drives against them. So, and it kills me that they're trying to get in these shootout games because their defense is not capable of holding up in those sort of contests. But I'm sure the Chiefs look at that and said, hey, we're going to go ahead and we think we can play a higher percentage game.
Why doesn't this seem to apply to Seattle, which is just outscoring everyone?
Seattle, because you can do this if you can win the turnover battle. Seattle had 32 turnovers last year. They're on a pace for that same thing this year to get in 2 turnovers per game.
But isn't that kind of random? Isn't there usually regression to the mean with turnovers?
Fumbles can be that way, but if you can trick the opposing quarterback into throwing interceptions, I think those are not necessarily regression to the mean. And plus, if you've got certain teams are just, they'll train themselves better to get into those sorts of situations. And I think when you've got Seattle, I still think, because you talk about that, remember that Patriots Super Bowl team you're mentioning? They were one of I talked about the 3 outliers in shootout games. They were one of the few outliers. Of course, they won all their games, so they won all their shootouts. But you generally speaking, you don't want to get into those sorts of contests. I think Seattle, they were 7-1 in shootouts last year, so they're one of the teams that might be able to do it. But man, you just have to hope that you're going to get your Russell Wilson to keep playing at this level, and you can get 2 turnovers a game. If you get a contest where you don't get the turnover
game,
unbelievable
to me. You know what it sounds like? It's like you're fighting Mike Tyson or Roberto Duran. You want to go toe to toe with this guy? What? You want me to go toe to toe with Duran? Like I get it. I get what you're saying, but it's like, okay, we're going to play the Chiefs. Who do they have? Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce. They got a deep receiving core. They have 2 running backs, both of whom can catch passes and run between the tackles. How are we going to play them? We're going to get into a shootout with them. But that's what you're telling me. I understand what you're saying is borne out by the numbers. I still can't get my brain to accept it. But there it is, the football scientist. You see, Raj, a scientist, does not. Thank you, Casey Joyner, of course. What can we plug for Casey? Can't we plug something for him, Raj?
Oh, yeah, you can find him on Twitter, at Casey Joyner, TFS, and he's got his stuff on his website, which is, I forget right now, but, you know, it's a scientist.
At KC Joyner, TFS, the football scientist. See, a scientist doesn't start out with an answer. He starts out with a question.
That's right.
So even if the even if the conclusion is counterintuitive, you go with it. All right, you don't want to be – if you're playing the Chiefs, you want to be in a shootout with them. Okay, I don't know what to say to that.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, the ESPN app, and SiriusXM Channel 80, and on your smart speaker, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join me on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Little tribe. Baker Mayfield says the loss makes 4-2 feel like 0-6.
Baker Mayfield.
What's that? No, wait a minute. I didn't call for the sound yet. Everyone calm down. Yes, you sabotaged my phone. I have a nice new phone bank here. Thanks. See this? Supposed to be able to take all the calls. But Raj sabotaged it. Doesn't want me having too much power.
Well, you went behind my back and you tried to go to the crew, to Chris Mitchell and Ali, and try to give you access to the phone bank. So I've sabotaged it. You're correct.
I understand. No, I believe me.
You can't have nice things.
What an ego in my producer. Look at that glamour shot. Look at that. Went into his dad's closet, got his best jacket.
Got a fresh bracelet.
Put our bracelet on. Made sure you saw the bracelet, too. Like you positioned your arm so you could see the bracelet.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's an important piece to show everybody. So Baker Mayfield and Odell Beckham Jr. Both said that even though the Browns boast a winning record, it hasn't felt like it this week following a deflating 38-7 loss against Pittsburgh. They're 17th straight to the Steelers. Oh my God, 17 losses at Heinz Field. Anyway. They've now played their division twice. Well, they've played the two best teams in the division twice. They started the season against the Ravens, and their first game against the Ravens, and their latest game against the Steelers, and they got, you know, whooped in both. They were blowouts. Odell's got to get out of there. Here's the most damning thing about Baker Mayfield, okay? Ryan Clark was the first to bring it up. He's all right. He's okay. He's an okay quarterback. He was asked by Mary Kay Cabot about a comment Stephen A. Smith had made about Baker. And I like Baker's response. Is that the response we have here? It is. So listen to Baker's response, and then I'll respond to it.
I don't give a damn what they say. It's within this building. We know we can be better. I know I can be better. And that's how it's going to be handled. The outside noise doesn't matter. They get paid to talk. We get paid to do our work. So. That's how it's going to be handled.
That is exactly the right answer. It's a perfect answer. He's exactly right. He shouldn't give a damn what anyone says. He knows he can get much better, and he's working on it. And he also acknowledged, look, they get paid to do that. I get paid to play. He's right. He's absolutely right. Here's the problem. He said he knows he could do much better. I'm not sure he can. I think he can do better. Much better? You know, I've been going off on Carson Wentz starting at the last quarter, third of last year, last season, through this season so far. Not because Wentz is the worst quarterback in the world. He's a starter. He's a solid starting quarterback. But because I expect so much more from Wentz. The talent is obvious. I've seen him hit the heights before. So I care. Like, Wentz makes you care because you can see the talent there. That's why I'm hard on him. I don't care that much about Baker anymore as a quarterback because I don't see the upside. I do think he can get better, and I think he's okay. And if he can get better, then, you know, he could be a little better than okay. But I don't see the superstar talent. I see an arm that is strong enough, but I've seen stronger arms. I've seen a ball that's accurate enough, but I've seen more accurate. I don't see a CPU that can process information quickly enough, nor do I see, you know, legs that can evade defenders enough. He ain't going to outrun defensive ends, let alone linebackers. Not that fast. And it's not like he is dissecting defenses like an elite player, and he's been in the league a little bit now. Now, I get it. 4 head coaches in 2.5 years. Look what happened with Alex Smith when he got some stability. He became a nice quarterback. But Alex Smith was the number one overall pick in the draft, and he never lived up to that, even once he got stability. He just didn't have the strength, really arm strength, but the overall, as an overall package, he wasn't quite good enough to be worth a number one overall pick. And that's Baker Mayfield, and we already know that. It's sad in a way. His attitude seems good. He's on a talented team, and he's getting some results. But though it's worse than I even realized, you know, until he made that comment. And he was like, I was like, exactly right, Baker. You shouldn't give a damn. And not only that, thank you for acknowledging that our job is to talk and your job is to play. And it's 100% right attitude. We only care about what goes on inside this building. And right attitude, I know I could be much better. All those things are good. Good for you. I just don't care as much anymore because I don't see the upside. The former Heisman winner's matchup is brought to you by Allstate. Get better protected with Allstate. You've never been in better hands. Take a call. Maybe Eli in Denver. You know, I've been talking about Carson Wentz, Eli.
Max, I'm a big fan of yours. I like a lot of your takes. Mm. Can I share with you my favorite Max Kellerman moment?
Go ahead.
My favorite moment was when you explained to your listeners the expression "Mentracht und Gottlacht."
Mentracht.
That was my favorite Max.
Mentracht und Gottlacht and Gottlacht is Yiddish. It means men means man. Tracht means thinks, or in this case, in the context, it means plans. And Gott lacht, it means, and God laughs. In other words, we people have all these plans, and then fate may have other ideas. It doesn't work out the way you think. Yes, that is a fine Max Kellerman moment among many. By the way, you know how impressed I am with myself that there's someone out in the world who I've never met who knows moments of mine? I'm very impressed with myself, Raj. People who have some degree of fame and pretend not to be self-conscious about it, not to be not to like it, they're full of it. It's so much better than working for a living this business because you get ego stroke. I mean, you have to deal with a lot of negative stuff too. You can't have thin skin, but you get ego stroke while you're getting paid to talk about sports. Only in America. News from Max Kellerman Nation. Eli just hit us up on the Dr. Pepper call-in line to talk about how great I am, and we agreed it was a fine call. Last Take, that's your take, is next. With help from the Home Depot, you can take on fall projects without ever leaving your own backyard. Use the mobile app to search, shop, and more. Flexible delivery options that bring everything you need right to your door. And if you need tools for a project, but not forever, you can rent them. You won't find a better toolbox anywhere else.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
It's Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and on your smart speaker, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive is proud to honor our veterans by donating cars to move their lives forward, especially in times of need. Learn more about their Keys to Progress program and plans for 2020. At keystoprogress.com.
You heard First Take?
At least it's good to hear your voice finally, because yeah. I know on First Take, I only hear you on the intro and outro.
Now hear Max's Last Take.
And before I get to your calls, I'm going to give you a last take. You know what, Roger, I brought this up on First Take today.
I was watching. I was watching.
My daughter, my eldest, who's about to be 12, has outgrown her basketball sneakers. She goes to a skills development program in New York called Steady Buckets. Coach Mackey, Coach Lefty, shout out to them. Anyway, so she needs new basketball sneakers. So we go online to look, and, you know, Kyrie's, KD's, which one she likes better. And it occurs to me that what about the WNBA? Don't they have any sneakers? And they don't? There's one collab between, like, Sue Bird got on a Kyrie, but that's it. And I'm thinking, look, I know it's free enterprise, and if there's a market for it, usually you'll see it. But sometimes people just miss a niche, or an opportunity. And it seems to me that they're missing something. The sneaker companies, there are lots of little girls who play basketball or like basketball, I'm sure, that would like a WNBA star's shoes instead of an NBA star's shoes. And even little boys, like, you'd say, well, would they wear sneakers that like a female star endorsed? Yeah, if they're fresh. If they're fresh, they would. The Seattle Storm just won the title. They have a bunch of stars on that team, including Sue Bird, Breonna Stewart. You would think someone would have, you know, some kicks for girls. I must not be the only parent with a daughter who plays basketball who wishes that were the case. Anyway, that's my final take. What do you think of that? Socially conscious. Nothing?
I like it. I like it.
See, you don't have a daughter. You have a son. So what do you care? You're like, it's fine. We just went and copped the Kyries. Maybe I want my daughter to have some Sue Birds, some Breonna Stewart.
I think they'd be hot seller.
Travis in Miami, you're on the Max Kellerman Show. What's your final take?
Hey, Max, huge fan. I appreciate you having me on, man. I just wanted to expound on the Baker Mayfield statement that you had made previously. Mm-hmm. You look at where the NFL is as well as the NBA. It's a tremendously different game than it's been the last 10 to 15 years, more three-point shooting in the NBA. The reason I brought that up compared to the NFL is the offensive line play has been about as bad as it's ever been in the history of the game. So you're noticing guys like Herbert, Burrow, guys with some maneuverability needing to come in on the teams and needing to be able to have that as an asset to be able to make up for poor offensive line play. That's not Baker's issue. He's got a tremendous offensive line. Mm-hmm. He's got a great running game, and he's got weapons at every position that you could possibly ask, from wide receiver to tight end. I am a Jet fan. He's not getting coached by Adderall Gase. Could you imagine Baker on that D3 roster in New York and Sam on that roster in Cleveland?
No, coaching. Listen, first of all, offensive line play. I'm not convinced, and I don't know enough about offensive line play, though I care about it a lot, to say whether it's gotten worse. I will say that less attention by head coaches, I think, are paid to the trenches, to the line of scrimmage, than there used to be. Because you can see guys who can get rid of the ball quickly, and different offensive schemes can offset not having a lot of time behind the line of scrimmage. I'm old school, maybe because I don't know enough. Maybe I'm too afraid to think about it in a new way. But I really think either it still comes down to your offensive line. Because a quarterback can make up for it, but your offensive line is the one area of the game that affects every single thing. It makes the other defense worse. It makes your quarterback better. It makes your running back better. It keeps you on the field if you want to control the clock. It the time of possession, it has a total impact on everything, on the other team's secondary, because the wide receivers, given enough time, are going to get open. So I still believe in it, and I don't know that it's that the play hasn't been as good as more resources are devoted to different areas other than the offensive line. But to me, it's still like, do you have a pocket or not? You got that push or not? I would say your point about Baker Mayfield is right, and Sam Darnold is right, but what that really suggests to me is that Darnold and Mayfield both fall into the category of players whose excellence on the upper end of what they can achieve, it's highly dependent on coaching. Baker Mayfield's 4-2. He has Stefanski. Kirk Cousins can't win. Stefanski's gone. He seems to me to have an effect on that, right? There are only a handful of players at the quarterback position who'd be great no matter where they went. Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, Patrick Mahomes. But most of them need coaching, and it does not appear that Sam Darnold has it. It does appear that Baker has it, and still that's not enough to move him out of the middle of the pack. Good final take. My Giants can take control of the feared NFC East tonight on Thursday Night Football, believe it or not, Max Kellerman Show.